Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey, friends and family of Sex with Simmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Simmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithsimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Simmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Simmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithsimmery. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I am so excited to be here with you today. Here with you is relative. We have had a very brief hiatus of the show. It is a very good hiatus. It's a very happy hiatus. The fantastic producer of our show, Nathan Karuna, just made himself another human. He and his wife made a small human, and it's very cute and squishy. And so we have not gotten to record in a few weeks, and so it's very nice to be back. And I also got to meet the squish. So yay. Yay, celebration for Nathan and his family. Yay, everybody say yay. I'm gonna imagine it. Yay. All right, but we are back, and I'm so excited. There's no better way to start it off than with our guest that we have today, who is coming from a profoundly important place in the field of pleasure. So I am very honored to welcome to the show Katie Zevrolarin. Did I say that right?
That's close enough.
Okay. Let's try this again. Zevrolarin. Yes. Okay. As a fellow person with a less than common name, I am very here with you right now. Zevrolarin. All right, Katie Zevrolarin. You are the PR director of Adam and Eve. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you guys? And congratulations, Nathan. That's amazing.
Oh, he's like smiling, and it's so cute over here. Yeah, so we're excited to have you on. You and I were discussing before the show started that Adam and Eve has been around for 47 years.
Yeah, we're the oldest provider of accoutrements of our nature in America.
That is incredible. So I'm just thinking immediately about how many things there are available today, but how different the climate must have been nearly half a century ago. So like, can you speak to that a little bit about like the origins of the company and what it was like to start up 47 years ago?
Well, I wasn't there 47 years ago.
Yeah.
but it actually, Adam and Eve started out as a condoms by mail company. The founder of our company, Phil Harvey, did a master's thesis, and he challenged the old Comstock law, which made it a federal offense to supply birth control means or information to people through the mail. And so he offered condoms by mail, challenging this old law, and a business was born. It boomed, and gradually he added more and more products. He tested some different things that weren't sexually related, and those didn't sell nearly as well as the sexually related items. So that's how Adam and Eve came to be.
It's so interesting because I'm now thinking about the name itself, right? So it's got a very evocative connotation that is biblical in nature. It's very traditional in some ways. But at the same time, like, as you mentioned, this is an inherently radical act, like directly in violation to the Comstock laws. So like, Can you speak to that at all? Like what is the ethos of this company and the origin of this name?
Well, he swears he doesn't really remember where it came from. But we're based out of North Carolina, so we're in the buckle of the Bible Belt, which is another kind of anomaly with the kind of business we are.
That's fascinating, and that also reminds me of like Liz a previous episode many years ago we did with the inventor of the Sibian and how much of the work they were doing was in Texas at the time. I believe they're now in Illinois, but like some of his original research, if I recall his stories correctly, was a lot in the South. And that interesting.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like, because of the, I guess, repressive nature, the possibilities for like, you know, coming up with solutions then become that much more salient because you have to. And it's, you know, to think about the existing laws in America around sex toys and how there are still U.S. states where they have to be sold as novelty items. So
yeah, there are still areas we don't ship to just based on the political climate. Yeah.
That is,
it's crazy to think of in this day and age, but that's a fact.
That's so baffling to me. So what got you initially interested in being a part of this industry?
Well, it's kind of a fluke. My roommate and I in college got the catalog. I don't know if you remember the old, you know, catalogs.
That Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, plain brown wrapper in the mailbox. And we giggled and laughed and, you know, and never thought in a million years that I would be working for them. And I've been with them almost 25 years now. So it's a great company and we have a lot of longtime employees. But I moved to North Carolina and I saw an ad in the paper and I had learned that the headquarters was here. And I thought, well, this would be a great story to tell that, you know, I got to see the inner workings of Adam and Eve. And I went in for an interview as a copywriter. My degree's in journalism and public relations. And I expected to just sort of do a covert, you know, walk through and see what it was all about. And 25 years later, I'm still there. It's a great company. There are a lot of, you know, women in management positions. People are often disappointed. I shouldn't tell this, but they're often disappointed when they come to the headquarters because I think they expect it to be a little scandalous and, you know, risque. And it's not. It's pretty much any office building you would walk into.
That has been my experience as well. Whenever I've gone into a space like that, I had the opportunity to go to like the second largest sex toy warehouse in the U.S. It was like the largest on the East Coast, and I was stunned by how much it felt like IKEA, but like less glamorous, like somehow less glamorous than IKEA.
Yeah,
because it's just
so you're
like,
kind of expecting photo shoots or you know, and something going on, and yeah.
But so you've been with the company for a fair amount of time and over some pretty critical years. So a great deal has happened culturally and in the industry or whatever. How has your role shifted and how has your experience shifted as cultural norms have shifted?
Well, I started as a copywriter. So I would, you know, describe the products and try to sell items. And I kept really pushing for more of a public I don't know, persona, to try to get us out there. And, you know, we were trying to fly under the radar a little bit during a long period. There were, you know, prosecutions and people trying to shut us down. And, you know, I mean, the adult business is a controversial business even now. But we finally decided sex and sex products were becoming more acceptable. And so we, you know, kind of raised our heads a little bit and got a nice welcome with the media mostly. And they raised our head a little bit more. And, you know, now we're excited. We have people, Women's Health, Prevention Magazine talking about us. So, I mean, that's a pretty big coup for us.
I'm curious if the fact that you've just been around for a while also lends a sort of credibility and a sort of like comfort because like, I can't remember a time when I didn't know the name Adam and Eve, and it is just sort of like synonymous with, you know, despite the fact that it's not the first time anybody's used that combination of names, but like together, it very, very much evokes an image of your products and like pleasure and those sort of things. So I'm just so curious about how the fact that you've been around for so long, if that just sort of makes it like, well, I guess they're not going away. This is like a thing that we're going to be okay with now.
Yeah. Well, I think there's, you know, there's always that fear when you order something online. You're like, oh, is this a fly-by-night company? They just set up, you know, some shell website. a lot of us remember, you know, Adam and Eve from our parents' days, you know, maybe finding the catalog or whatever. Yeah. So I think the fact that we've been around so long and our name has been around so long kind of lends some credibility too.
You spoke a little bit about prosecutions and people trying to come at you. Can you speak a little bit more about that? Like more specifics, like what sort of angles do sex negative people take to combat your work?
Well, you know, I don't want to talk about the negative stuff, but of course a lot of people have the, you know, the preconceptions that what we do, you know, encourages young people to have sex or encourages infidelity or, you know, things like that. And that couldn't be further from the truth. And, you know, when we first built our, the building where we are now, which is in Hillsborough, North Carolina, we were protested. They didn't want us breaking ground. A lot of, a small minority, but some people, you know, thought we were going to be a bad influence in the community. And, I think we really won them over. We got business of the year from the Chamber of Commerce, and it made national news a few years ago. So we're respected. I think people kind of realize after they get to know us that, you know, we're just like everybody else. We're not a bunch of heathens in a basement somewhere.
Well, I mean, I also would be okay and equally supportive if you were, like, just, you know.
So. I know, it's a little disappointing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's I think that's sort of one of the things that that I would love is if, you know, like, people could just have a business where they're like, hey, this is a lifestyle I espouse, and this is a thing that I like to do, and you don't have to do if you don't want to, carry on. And it's like, but no, we cannot. And I'm just imagining these people whose objection is that, like, you're going to lead people into sex. It's like, have you heard of sex? Like, because it sells itself. Don't worry. Don't worry.
Right.
Sex has a pretty good marketing team of existing. Like, the human need for touch does a pretty good job. The human need for intimacy does a pretty good job of selling that product. Don't you worry.
I think we're all pretty good examples of that. Yeah.
I mean, and that's not to say that everybody's experience of sex is inherently pleasurable, of course. And so, you know, like, I guess the only thing that I would want to ward people away from is sex that's, like, bad or boring or painful or just in some way, like, not fun. Because if it becomes a chore, if it becomes terrible, then, like, that's sort of killing the whole point of it. Like,
exactly. Yeah. And I think people forget. I think a lot of people in longtime relationships especially forget that sex is supposed to be fun.
And it's,
you know, it becomes routine, it becomes boring, or and I think that's where Adam and Eve can really step in and spice things up.
Well, you mentioned one of the concerns that people might have is that leading to infidelity, which is a fascinating thing because I'm not even sure I understand, like, that thought process, like how that would work at all. But I had the opportunity to talk to Esther Perel yesterday. She spoke at the PA Women's Conference, and she spoke about she spoke in general about infidelity and adultery, and talking about how we start out, like, having these passionate feelings towards a partner and then just sort of acclimate to each other, and we no longer give each other our best selves, and we no longer invest in sexuality as, like, an exploration and a time for fun and for pleasure. And so one of the reasons that adultery sometimes seems like a good option, even among a person for whom it is, like, a violation of their values, is that they want to, like, just feel something and, like, feel alive. And
right.
Instead, why not do something with your existing partner that is within the bounds of what you've agreed upon to make it more fun and exciting? Like, that's
exactly
a possibility.
yeah, totally. But I mean, it is a shame that people still, you know, I mean, some men especially are still threatened by, you know, women using toys. We encourage women to use toys with their men. You know, as an accompaniment, not as a replacement for.
So do you consider yourself, like, largely aiming towards any particular type of people?
Well, no, we're for, you know, women, couples, men. I think back in the 70s, we were generally, you know, a little men's secret, basically. And that's really evolved, where our customer base used to be about 80-20 men. to women. It's now about 60-40.
Interesting.
And we've seen huge changes with the internet, especially.
So when it was a largely male audience, what was that, just largely condom sales, or like what was the prevailing interest in buying?
Condoms, DVDs, VHS tapes, which, you know, they've kind of gone by the wayside. Now we're mainly a toy company. And then masturbators. Masturbators are still really big for men.
Yeah. I have a few friends that I've had conversation with about why there seems to be still some shame around male masturbatory toys, while female empowerment and messaging around sex-positive feminism has encouraged women to feel empowered by their sex toys, but not necessarily translated to men feeling as brave to talk about their stuff. And I'm curious if you hear anything about that from clients or talking within your own culture.
I think it's become more acceptable. And I think as the products become, you know, more technologically advanced, it kind of leads to more acceptability. I mean, back in the old days, there were just, fake vaginas for men and the pumps that were kind of, you know, archaic looking, awkward. And I really think technology has improved so much. There are all kinds of different, you know, things and things that your partner can use with you.
What are the major toys that are rocketed in 2017?
For men or for women or both?
All of the above.
For men, we've seen a huge increase in prostate toys. I think, you know, that taboo is being lifted a little bit. Straight men are starting to wonder what all the fuss is about and want to try some stuff out for themselves. So that's interesting. For women, the rabbit is still big. The rabbit, we saw a huge boost after Sex and the City made such a big deal about it. And it's available in, tons of different variations now. But the new thing that I think has become really popular are the Womanizer and the Satisfier vibrators. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
Well, in case someone listening is not familiar, could you elaborate a little bit?
Okay. It's a new type of vibrator, and it's for clitoral stimulation, but it, instead of applying, you know, really strong vibrations or pressure, it actually creates more of like a vortex, almost like a mimic of oral sex with some suction. Huh. And yeah, it's new, and a lot of women are really excited about it.
I like it. Are there things that are going to be available that are not yet?
We see new products come in every month that, you know, are new and innovative. I want to see what the whole sex robot thing is going to be about I keep hearing about.
Okay.
I don't know.
Are there like intra company conversations about will Adam and Eve sell sex robots?
I haven't been a party to those conversations. I would like to. I'm curious. I mean, you know, every day when I go to Google News, it's there's something in there about it.
Oh, yeah. There's like definitely a lot of conversation. There was like this whole – several people sent me a link to an article or variations on articles about – there was a sex toy that was debuted at a showcase, and the headline is just that it just got – totally obliterated by this line of creeper dudes who molested it. And it sort of reminded me of, I mean, not only a lot of the conversations that people have had about what's the problem with sex robots is that it just leads to objectification in this way, but also reminded me of like Marina Abramovich, like sort of doing performance art as a side piece. But then another person on Twitter pointed out that they had photos from the person who built the sex bot, and they said, that's not even what happened. That reporter said that stuff, but that's not true. Here's pictures of it happening. Here's pictures of people like sitting with it. And like, here was the toy at the end of the night. Like, she's not all messed up. I don't know why that person said that. I guess they wanted an extreme view. And so I was very like, oh, okay. All right.
Because
none of the pictures were actually, in the horrifying headlines were actually all that terrible. It was just like these accounts. And then, you know, I was like, oh, okay. Well, that, I don't know why that would change anything. Cause like still people are going to be good and bad to objects as they are good and bad to people. So,
right.
You know, I don't
sounds
really
like someone
know.
Had an agenda. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that it's like, whatever sex robots come up, I just want to like, just ask people like, what are your feelings on this? And what are your fears? And what are your hopes and stuff? And cause I think that a lot of it is what we are projecting our fears of, you know, the way that people treat us. So,
right.
Like,
well, and there's the whole, you know, robots taking over the world fear too. I mean, I see headlines like that, you know, your sex robot can kill you. I don't know. I just think it's an interesting time.
Do you have a particular personal opinion on the matter? Are you excited to see sex robots?
I don't know. I think it's kind of odd. You know, I don't know. I watched Lars and the Real Girl, and that was kind of interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, because I mean,
remains to be seen.
Most of the depictions are sort of extreme. There's other like Dave Cat, who's just like obsessed with talking about his real dolls, like, and he's just like sort of very much about getting limelight on himself and his robot and his real doll girlfriends. And then there's like the folks who talk about the possibility of having you know, these as options for people who might have desires that they want to do, but they don't want to do to another person because they know they're unethical. And like, I don't know what to say as an objection to that matter. Like, if someone is aware that what they want to do to a human isn't great, but they just want to do it, and then like this would be a socially acceptable way to do it, like I guess I can't disagree with that. Until I know.
I mean, whatever you want to do in the privacy of your bedroom. You know,
yeah. I mean, unless we have reason to believe that the robots like actually can feel and have feelings and that sort of thing. And then we get like another, that's a totally different state of conversations. But like, if it's just literally mechanical stuff and you're just going to do stuff to it, I don't know that I care any more than what you put into your cup. Right. Like, it's not really for me to determine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you heard some of the stuff we said to our Amazon Echo,
okay, do tell. Do tell.
No, we're always trying to stump the, you know, the Alexa, but I just can't even imagine if it was, you know, a sex robot, what people would do.
Yeah. And then I guess if it recorded, that would probably change things also. That was just a thought that popped in my head. What if your sex bot is got video camera eyes? I don't know. How does that change things? I don't know.
This sounds like a good movie idea, though.
Oh, no. Somebody quick, make that movie and make it a good movie and put Josh Lucas in it. Yeah. Somebody do
it. I'll support
that. Yeah. So we talked a little bit before we started recording about the power of sex toys, the power of the stuff that Adam and Eve sells, like, to genuinely change lives. So can you talk a little bit about the folks who have talked to you about what your products have done?
Yeah. You know, we started selling sex toys in the 70s. And ever since then, we have gotten letters from women once a month or more, still saying, you know, your company, your products have changed my life. We've had women in their 50s who've written us notes and said, I never had an orgasm before. You know, I didn't know what all this was about. And, we consider ourselves, you know, a fun company. We encourage people to have fun. But it really is kind of humbling and sad when you think about how many people don't experience their sexuality to the fullest. And I think it's awesome that we get to help people do that.
That's like, oh man. Okay. Yeah. You're speaking my language right now. The sadness I feel that somebody would have experienced perhaps years of experience with partnered sex and not have had experience an orgasm. Not that an orgasm is the end all be all. Not that it's necessarily the goal, because I don't want to advocate for that either, but
exactly. Yeah.
But just that, like, at some point, that should happen in the same way that if you do a lot of exercise, you should break a sweat. You know, it's just like, it's one of those things that's like correlated with it. And it's very much, there's still a very strong gender component to it. We still have lots of research that there is a gendered gap to orgasms among male-female partnerships, especially short-term, like, one-night stand hookup situations, that, like, that gap doesn't happen in same-sex pairings. So that says there is some sort of chasm that needs to be broached in terms of perhaps literacy around women's bodies, perhaps just, like, comfort with being able to ask, what do you like? Comfort with being able to ask, what do I like? And then communicating it to another person. There's just so many different elements there that it's, right. You know, it's not taboo to have sex. It's taboo to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a lot of it starts with sex education. You know, I have two kids. I have a 14 and a 16-year-old daughter, and I try to be very open with my kids. My parents, you know, it was a different time, and it was, you know, in the deep South, and, you know, we all come with our baggage, but I try to be as open as I can be with my kids. And my 16-year-old, who, you know, we talk about stuff, and she, it was like a light bulb went off in her head when we talked about it, recently. And she said, oh, I really didn't know that women were supposed to enjoy it too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's,
I mean, you know, in 2017, that's crazy.
Yeah, that is.
Not that I'm encouraging anything, but, you know, I believe that everybody should have the facts. Everybody should have the information.
Well, when we have education resources for kids that is actually comprehensive in nature and includes discussions of pleasure and consent, not just pieces on, you know, don't get pregnant or get an STD, when we actually talk about it from a motivational perspective, like, why do people engage in sexual behavior, when we actually address the reasons that someone has sex, including why a teenager might have sex, then they're much more likely to actually defer the decision. They're much more likely to wait a little bit longer. And when they do, to make choices that are less likely to lead to those outcomes that we talked about, like, versus an abstinence model where we're just like, don't do it. And you don't need to know how to do it any differently, you know? So, like, it ends up just being this messaging that, like, boys are going to want this thing from girls. So girls, keep that thing sacred because it's really your only value. And then, like, boys, like, don't pressure the girls. No means no. But we all know that you're all just a bunch of monsters. So, like, nobody ends up, like, having the equipment to handle the reality of our culture, which is just like this onslaught of sexualized images. And then they're like just trying to make sense of it. And then they're like, I guess this is what we do, but they don't really know what to do. And so again, there's all these girls who don't have this expectation that this is for them or about them, that
exactly
it's a thing that's done to them.
Yeah.
So it's like,
sad. It's sad.
It's like a basic rights issue for me. Yeah. So you mentioned a little bit about, you know, like how you were raised around sexuality. So, like, what were your beliefs around sex, like, growing up, and how has working at this company changed that? And how have people in your life outside of your work responded to the fact that you work for this company?
Well, I grew up in Tennessee, small town, very religious town. My family wasn't particularly religious, but my dad was the vice principal of the high school that I went to. So, of course, I had to be, you know, an example. I had to be the good girl. And, I mean, the message that I got was you waited until you were married. And I never knew sex was supposed to be fun or enjoyable or, you know, it was all just sort of hush hush. And I was always really curious about it. I read as much as I could. But it was probably not until I was in my 30s that I actually figured out, like, oh, this is what it's all about, you know? And that's sad. I mean, I don't know. I think your 20s, most people are, you know, it's a different culture, though, the whole hookup culture now.
It's actually interesting because what is different about hookup culture is that people are, they're not having more sex. Actually, they're having less. They're having fewer partners and they're having it less frequently. But the way that dating is happening is that there are hookups and maybe later it'll turn into dating. And that's that's really the behavioral change. Because it's not like one night stands are new either. But rather than, will you go on a date with me? And then X number of dates later, sex happens. Instead, it's like sex happens, and then if you continue to have sex and you continue to hang out when you're not having sex, that is...
then you might date.
Yeah, then you might date. So that's really the major difference, because in just pure numbers games, baby boomers had way more sex than millennials. Like, not just because they've had more time, but when they were the same age. And teenagers today are having even less. So, like, that's sort of one of the fundamental confusion points around hookup culture, because it's like there's less teen pregnancy. You know, there's so many of these other demonstrable ways in which they're actually far more conservative than their parents.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know. It's a different time.
Yeah. Like that is the thing. We're like operating under totally different cultural norms. But yeah. So how did working there, like, shape your ideas, and have everybody been supportive? Is anybody like giving you pushback?
You know, I've only had a handful of people who gave me a hard time about where I work, and they're not people that I really want to hang out with anyway. So that's, you know, most of the time people are curious. That's what I get more than anything. I get cornered at cocktail parties or dinners or, you know, and questioned, and, oh, can you please get me something? I get that everywhere I go.
Why, can they not just buy it?
Like... Well, you know, there's still the stigma attached. I mean, I guess they could go online, but there's, you know, a lot of people still feel funny about going into a brick and mortar shop.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, you know, when I would go home, I would bring bags of stuff for my friends and family, and my grandmother would ask me questions. She's like, I just don't understand this anal thing. So imagine having that conversation with your 85-year-old grandmother.
Hell yeah, Granny.
Yeah.
How did that conversation go?
I was just, you know, I said there are a lot of nerve endings there. People, you know, enjoy it. Try it. You might like it. Use lots of lube.
Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's funny. It's funny.
So I know that you have hooked us up with a coupon code specifically for our listeners. Can we tell them a little bit about this?
Yay. Yeah. If you want to order almost anything from Adam and Eve, go to adamandeve.com, and you can get 50% off any one item and free shipping. If you use code GET50, GET50, the number, at the checkout.
Yay. So
yeah.
So I'm on a budget. What kind of stuff can I get? What are my options?
Well, we have, I mean, gosh, if you go to the website, it's everything from, you know, silver bullets and couples, you know, rings and enhancers, to the womanizer and the satisfier, like I talked about. We have some fun remote control vibes that I encourage for couples to play around with. We've also got lingerie and games and massage oils and, I mean, pretty much anything that you can think of to spice up the bedroom.
So let's say I don't have a budget. Let's say that I want to be a conspicuous consumer of sex toys that are big and elaborate and will show everyone how cool I am. What is the most outrageous thing I could get?
I think that we have a machine that's similar, if not the Sibian. So, and I think it's around $800, $900.
Nice.
Throw caution to the wind.
Get like four of them.
Just decorate your house with them.
Instead of couches. Yeah, couches are old school. Get vibrating furniture. Yes, I'm into it.
You'd never get rid of your friends. They'd just be there all the time.
Yeah, get out of here, friends. They're like squirrels. Get away. This is mine. So... You've been described, or you have described yourself as a sexuality advocate. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means to you?
Yeah, I just think, you know, people kind of lose focus of how fun and what sex is about. You know, people do it because it's routine. People do it because they feel obligated. People do it because they're trying to get pregnant. People, you know, and it's fun. And I have found that the more you do it, the more you want to do it, you know? And I think that if we bring the fun back to it, whether it's with products from Adam and Eve or, you know, role playing or, I mean, whatever, to keep it kind of light and entertaining. It doesn't always have to be staring into each other's eyes and, you know, something you see on the Lifetime movie. I just encourage people to enjoy it. That's what it's there for.
I love it. All right. Any other words of wisdom that you want to convey as someone who has been in this field and talked to a lot of folks around sexuality?
No, I mean, we work with licensed sex therapists. I don't know. You've covered a lot. And I've listened to some of your podcasts, and I think you cover a lot of ground. And, you know, I applaud you and what you do.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice of you to say.
And if you need anything from me, you know, I can hook you up.
Ooh, this is a good day. Today is a great day. That's wonderful. All right. Well, Katie, I want to thank you so much for finding time to talk to us and also for hooking us up with this Get 50 coupon code. So I appreciate
that. Definitely.
Yeah, thank you so much. So everybody go use that coupon code. Go check out Adam and Eve. Thank you so much for listening and have a fantastic day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.